Hey, Adam Ray here for the About Last Night podcast. Let me ask you something. You like making great money, right? Yeah. Well, here's a really cool opportunity I just had to share with you. Driving with Uber. Yeah, Uber's that popular smartphone app that connects riders with drivers. Pretty sure you heard of it. Kind of the most popular thing on the planet. I take Uber a bunch. I love it. Whether I'm trying to avoid drinking and driving, or I just want to, you know, chat with people from all over the world, because that's what people who drive with Uber are. Some of the most interesting stories I've ever heard have been with people who drive Ubers. One time I met a guy named Mark whose wife was expecting their third kid. She got laid off, so he had to pick up another job in addition to being a dentist. So he started driving Uber because it was flexible, and he met people and let his wife stay at home and be mom. It was crazy. Not only did I get to know a sweet dude and get my rides taken very responsibly from A to B, but this dude traveled all over the world prior to being married and having kids, and he had some of the craziest stories I've ever heard, like taking mushrooms in the red light district in Amsterdam, which I would repeat on this ad, but Mark's family is probably listening. People who drive with Uber love this job. You know why? Because they love being their own boss. They love earning great money, and it's easy to start. All you need is a car and a license. That's it. Driving with Uber is great for anyone who needs flexibility. Parents, it's a really easy way to work around your family's schedule. And students, you can make some extra money in between your classes, all right? Now is the prime time to start earning cash driving with Uber. You'll thank me, I'm telling you, for telling you how to get paid every week. You know what? You could be driving with Uber, so stop listening to this ad and log on to drivewithuber.com. If you've got a car and a license, put them both to work for you today and start earning some serious life-changing money today. Sign up to Drive with Uber by visiting drivewithuber.com. That's drivewithuber.com. Don't be a goober. DriveWithUber.com. And now enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray.
Hey, everybody. It's Brad Williams from the About Last Night podcast. Adam Ray is still on location shooting a TV show and finishing up a movie as well. Busy guy. So just me on the show today, but a very special interview. An interview I've been trying to do for a while, but he didn't want to do it for the longest time, but I finally got him to sit down with me. My dad, my father, Pete Williams, is on the podcast today, and I could not have been more happy. Now, my dad is a bit of a Luddite. He hates technology, so after about 45 minutes of explaining to him what a podcast is, he finally agreed to do it, sit down with me, and talk with his only son. My dad's got a fascinating story, and that is, you know, my dad's not a little person. My mom is not a little person. So when I was born, they had to deal with, how do you raise a child who's different? How do you raise a child that society views as not being normal? And he had some fascinating insights about that. He had some things that I didn't know. He had some things that he had completely forgotten about. Apparently, my mom almost died giving birth to me. I had no idea about this. Dad brought it up, and now hopefully he also pays for my therapy. It was a really fascinating interview, and I also found out an interesting DuckTales connection that me and my dad have. I'll let you listen. I'll let you enjoy that. But it was really cool, and he offered some great advice, not just for parents, but in life in general. My dad has all these little maxims, these little sayings that he says to help you get through life and help you make the right decision. And we kind of go through those. And then we briefly touch upon his fight with cancer and the fact that he beat the crap out of that son of a bitch. So this was a really cool thing. And I know you guys loved the podcast we did with Adam Ray's mom, Puddin. You guys had such a great positive response to that, and finding out where Adam and I come from in terms of how we became who we are today. And you definitely get that in this interview with my dad. You get the sense of humor. You get the lightheartedness. It was a really good time. Really glad I got to talk to my dad. And this is something that not only that I hope you guys enjoy, but I know that my family is going to enjoy for years to come. As always, we ask that you go to iTunes and rate and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Give us a rating. Say a comment. Say how much you love when Adam Ray does his Tony Danza impression. Say how much you love when I make a racist joke and make everything awkward and take the podcast to a grinding halt. Or maybe you don't like that. I don't know. Just tell us what you like about the podcast on iTunes. Those ratings help us climb the charts and help us get more distinguished guests that look at those charts and say, holy crap, they're high in the ratings. They've had Melissa McCarthy. They've had Bob Saget. They've had Adam Ray's mom on the podcast. How did they get Adam Ray's mom? Well, we have a good connection there. So by all means, continue to rate the podcast. Do that. Also visit estoymerchandise.com and pick up your About Last Night podcast swag. We got mugs. We got t-shirts. We got Ronin the Quave t-shirts. We've got a shirt where I'm riding Adam Ray on a baby Bjorn on the helm of the Titanic. Adam Ray may or may not have a boner. I'm not at liberty to say about that, but you can buy the t-shirt and you can check that out for yourself. Go to estoymerchandise.com, type in About Last Night Podcast, and get those t-shirts. And then when you bring them to live shows, we'll sign them for you. We would love to sign your t-shirts. We love seeing you guys out at the live shows when you tell us that you listen. Can't thank you enough for that. And also, as always, go to aboutlastnightpodcast.com and click on the Amazon banner. Go to the Amazon banner, you click on that, that takes you to Amazon.com, and then you could shop for anything that you want on Amazon.com. You can shop for season one of Who's the Boss on DVD. You can shop for a Scrooge McDuck mask. We don't care. Shop for whatever you want to shop for. And they kick back a couple of shekels to us so we can keep the lights on and keep this podcast going the way you guys like it. Adam Ray is on Twitter. Follow him on Twitter at Adam Ray Comedy. He's on Instagram at Adam Ray 33. His website, AdamRayTV.com. Upcoming tour dates from Mr. Ray. He's going to be in Las Vegas, Nevada. Yeah, Vegas. You thought you had everything. You thought you had Cirque du Soleil. You thought you had an Elvis impersonator. Now we're sending you Adam Ray. You don't have a Tony Danza impersonator. Now you got it. Las Vegas. Go see Adam August 31st through September 6th at the Laugh Factory, which is located inside the Tropicana Hotel. So even if you lose at the tables, you can come and Adam Ray will make you laugh. You'll have a great time in Vegas. Adam Ray is going to be at the Hollywood Improv in Hollywood, California, September 12th. And Fort Worth, Texas. Adam Ray is coming to Hyenas in Fort Worth, one of my favorite clubs in the country. Been there a lot. Adam Ray is going to make his debut there September 17th through the 19th. So come on out, Fort Worth, and show him a good time. Show him why they call you Cowtown. Follow me on Twitter at FunnyBrad. I'm on Instagram at BradWilliamsComic. My website, BradWilliamsComedy.com. Here's some upcoming tour dates for me. We were just talking about Texas. Texas, I'm coming to you. I'm coming to Corpus Christi. Corpus Christi, Texas. Chuckles Comedy Club, August 20th through the 22nd. That's Selena's hometown. That's right. Selena's! You're going to have Selena, and you're going to have Brad Williams there, August 20th through the 22nd. Virginia Beach, Virginia, I'm coming to you. I'm going to be at the Funny Bone, August 27th through the 30th. Would love to see you, some About Last Night podcast fans at that. And then, much like the Brady Bunch, I'm going to Hawaii, a very special Hawaii tour in Maui and Honolulu. I'm going to be at Charlie's in Maui, September 10th, and I'm going to be at Hawaiian Brian's in Honolulu, Hawaii, September 12th. That's right, going on the road to Hawaii. I'm going to go on stage wearing a coconut bra and cross everything off people's bucket list that night. Just a one-stop shop. So I believe those are the tour dates. That's the EstoyMerchandise.com plug. Rate the podcast on iTunes. Go to AboutLastNightPodcast.com. Click on the Amazon banner. These are too many words. I'm forgetting what I'm saying. All right. But by all means, do all those things. But for the most part, sit back, relax, and enjoy this very special About Last Night podcast with my father, Mr. Pete Williams.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's About Last Night.
Welcome, everyone, to a special episode of the About Last Night podcast. We don't necessarily have a famous comedian or actor on the show today, but we have the most important guest in terms of, well, I mean, I'm a little biased, but we have the most important guest to me in the history of the podcast, someone who literally you can say without their existence, I would not be here. And that is probably the only time that that is an official and accurate statement. We have my father on the podcast, Mr. Pete Williams. Hi, Dad.
Hi, Brad. good to be with you.
Yeah. Now, I would ask you to turn off your cell phone for the interview, but I don't think that would be a problem with you, is it?
Well, I actually do own a cell phone. I've had, I think, 3 or 4 calls on it in the last 6 months. And the last one was from you about 3 months ago.
So you're an active, you're an active on the social media. You tweet, you Instagram, you do all these things, right?
No. No, I'm sort of down on technology because I think it's hurting our lives. That's what I think. A lot of it is. All that kind of stuff is, kids ought to be paying more attention to each other and not to their machines. That's what I feel like.
Do you think that we're now, kids now growing up are not as socially adjusted because they're just on texting all day and the phones and...
Well, there's good news and there's bad news about that stuff. I think there's less bullying, but you can bully on social media also.
Yeah, cyberbullying.
Cyberbullying, that kind of a thing. But kids don't beat each other up as much now. They're too busy looking at their phones. They might get run over by cars because they don't bother to look up. because, I mean, I saw 4 kids walking down the street a couple months ago, and all 4 of them were looking down at their machines.
Yeah.
And I thought, my gosh, they're going to walk right out in the intersection. And they almost did. One of them was smart enough to stop everybody.
Wow. Now, do you think, I mean, obviously, the time that you raised me was different than this in terms of the technology. Do you think right now you'd be able to adjust to raise a kid in these kinds of technological times?
Well, to a certain degree, I'm still raising kids, and yes.
But, I think we're good. I think at age, you know, I'm off on my own. I'm doing okay with my life.
Oh, well, at least you're off the family payroll.
This is true. Now, one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you, Dad, not only because I enjoy talking with you at all times, but I'm doing a large part of my act now about kind of how you raised me and how you reacted when you found out that one of your sons or your son was going to be a little person. Now, just to clarify, you are not a dwarf yourself.
Last time I checked.
Yeah. And mom is not a little person. There are no dwarves in our family. So it's funny because when people ask they're like, where are your parents from? I always assume I'm going to say something like Narnia, but no, you were born in Texas, mom from Savannah, Georgia. So, yeah, you guys are average height. When did you find out that I was going to be a little person?
I think I didn't find out until the day you were born, as I recall.
Really?
Yes. Okay. I think, when you were born, a few seconds thereafter, I was in the operating room. In fact, and now that I think about it, your mom stopped breathing, and I happened to tap the anesthesiologist on the shoulder and said, "Is that normal? That zero blood pressure?" And he said, "Oh my gosh!" And he poured some liquid into an IV into your mom, and she woke up. And
oh my God.
And now that I recall, I didn't
know that story.
No, I just thought of it. That's the first time I thought of that in 30 years.
So mom almost died giving birth to me.
Well, yeah, and if anybody could see your head, they'd know why.
I'm sure. Yeah, that's the thing is people assume that when I was born that I was just this little pygmy like mom sneezed and then I came shooting out of there.
No.
Like that's not exactly what it was. My head was about the same size as it is right now.
That's correct. I'll tell you a little interesting story about you being a little person because prior to your mom even getting pregnant, I played golf a couple of years in a row at Billy Barty's golf tournament, which was a tournament to benefit little people.
LPA, Little People of America.
Yeah, and, that's correct.
Yeah, and for our younger listeners who may not be familiar with the name Billy Barty, Billy Barty was the prominent little person actor in Hollywood. Did so many films. He was the old wizard in the movie Willow. He did a couple of Mel Brooks movies. He played a homeless guy in Life Stinks. And was sort of like the go-to name for all things dwarf actor.
Right.
And is one of the founders, actually the founder, of LPA, Little People of America, the organization that brings dwarfs together all throughout the country. So you're saying before I was even born, you were playing in his charity tournament.
That's correct. And he wasn't the only little person that was at the tournament, because the tournament benefited LPA. There were other little people there, and I got to know him. And Billy made a point of having me in his group, because at that time I was a pretty good player. And Billy wanted to win.
He was very competitive.
He was a competitive guy. And I remember one of the first things I learned about little people is, you know, don't pat them on the head.
Yeah.
Don't pick them up.
Yeah.
Don't treat them any differently. And so I learned all the sort of manners around getting along with little people. And the funny thing is, I remember we were playing a scramble format. If you play golf, you know what that means. It doesn't matter. But there was a hole that par is a five par. And we got it on the green in two. And so we could two putt for a birdie, one putt for an eagle, but the putt was long. It was like 50 feet long. Mm-hmm. Billy, I remember, was wearing purple knickers and purple suspenders. He was fabulous. But anyway, Billy went first and hit the putt, and it went in from like 50 feet. Yeah. And I was standing there. I was going berserk because we just made eagle on this scramble format. And he ran and jumped into my arms. And I said, Billy, I'm not supposed to be holding you like this. He says, it's okay. We made an eagle. You know, he was so excited. It was really cool.
Well, there's certain times when I guess it's socially acceptable. You know, if I were to find out that I just won the lottery, for a few moments after that, I don't give a fuck if you pick me up. I don't care what you do. I'm a damn millionaire. Yeah. Well, I'm sure in that scenario, when he gets the putt, sort of all rules go out the window.
Yeah.
So you play in this tournament, and then was this while mom was pregnant, or?
Well, the second year I played in, as I recall, your mom was pregnant, and then. So then you were born in January, and I think the tournament was spring or early summer. I can't remember exactly. But anyway, I showed up for the tournament the next year, and they have a banquet and stuff, and somebody announced that I had a son who was a little person. And everybody at the banquet came up and said to me, congratulations. Mm-hmm. And I thought, how cool is that? I thought, I got something special here, because look at all these people are really nice. They're fun. They hang together. And Billy Barty seems like a generous, good man. And and to get congratulated for having a child with special needs makes it worthwhile. Makes it all worthwhile. I'm unique. None of my friends have a little person or a kid.
Well, yeah. And I would imagine all your friends at the time, they're not too familiar with dwarfism. They just know kind of the standards of what they've seen from Willy Wonka and Wizard of Oz. So when you tell them, like, when you tell your friends, no, my child's a dwarf, my child's a little person, did they have looks on their faces like, ooh? Like
no, but, you know, you'd hear statements of sympathy.
Right.
And then I told them, no, I don't want sympathy. Mm-hmm. Because all the little people are congratulating me, and the people that know about dwarfism are congratulating me because, you can't have a bad day when you got a dwarf around. In fact, along those lines, here I am doing a podcast with my son. But earlier today, I woke up and we had a water main that was broken, and I thought, this is a bad day, you know? Yeah. But Brad shows up and it turns a bad day into a good day.
Well, I got water spurting out all over my backyard, but a dwarf is coming to visit me, so it's kind of a wash.
Yeah,
it's kind of a wash.
Oh, is that a pun? Yeah. A wash?
Get it?
Yeah, get it. I get it. Okay, but anyway, no, I'm convinced that. You know, as a cancer patient, it's mm-hmm. just be good to be given a dwarf.
we'll get into that a little later. So you found out I was a little person. Now, did you have any fears when the doctor first comes in and says, like, we've looked at your son and he's a dwarf? Did you have any concerns?
I guess the only concern that I can think of and that I could articulate would be, I hope I'm up to the task of mm-hmm. being a cool dad for a little person, because, you know, you don't want to mess it up. You got a great right. opportunity. You don't want to mess it up. You want to run with it. And as far as I was concerned, I want to take advantage of the fact that I have a unique situation.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make the best of it.
I like that was your attitude, because being an LPA as long as I've been, I've encountered some horror stories of parents when tall parents, when they find out that their child is a little person, a lot of them give them up for adoption because they don't want their child to be different. You know, they don't want to have to go through that, or they just kind of hide them away. I run into dwarf children that they're 18 years old before they realize that there's actually other little people in the world, before they get involved in an organization like LPA.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Yeah. I mean,
to be around little people is to be happy. I mean, it's really funny. And I don't mean in the happy, you know,
happy, sleepy, happy, dopey doc.
I don't mean that. in that context.
Yeah.
I just mean that, you know, it's hard to, it's hard to get down when sure. you've got someone with you that's
who's
up.
Literally already down.
Well, that's true too.
Now, there's a story you once told me where you knew that I was a dwarf, and then you went to one of these LPA meetings, and you saw everyone at this meeting complain about being a dwarf and all the bad things that were going on about being a dwarf. Is, oh, this person isn't adjusting to me, that this person is being mean to me, and you stood up and said what at one point?
I'm not sure that I recall that particular episode.
You said that you asked him, like, well, is there anything good?
Yeah, and I said,
yeah,
you know, to them, well, gee, is it all downside being a little person? This was when you were still, you were a year old or less,
mm-hmm.
and I went to an LPA meeting, yeah, and I just said, "What's the upside?"
Mm-hmm.
And some of the little people start talking about things like being able to do jobs that other people can't do. You can fit right. in places that other people can't fit into.
Yeah, you can be a limbo champion.
That's right, easy and standing up.
Yeah.
So, you know, God gives you a lot in life, and if you make the best of it, that's all you can do. And you ought to be able to be happy with yourself and with who's around you. That's all.
Mm-hmm. And then I've told this story on Dr. Drew's TV program, and now it's kind of made its way into my stand-up act, where I talk about how you raised me in that. You always taught me that people will make fun of you. That's just going to be part of life.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, you didn't try to do the thing where you're like, no, you're just perfect. You're just like everybody else. Nothing's different about you. If anything, you're better. You're better than everybody else. Like, you didn't try to fill my head with those sort of
no
falsities.
No. You know, I got made fun of, even though I'm beautiful.
It's tough. It's very hard being beautiful.
It's hard being beautiful. But no, we all get kidded, and mm-hmm. It's how you approach people who kid you. You can turn it around. You can make jokes of it, or you can let it affect you. And my parents were very strong-willed people, and They taught me that I was just as good as anybody else, and I know I am because I can just read it right in the Constitution.
There you go.
It says that I'm equal.
USA, USA.
So anyway, I'm equal to anybody else. At least I get a vote.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you have to take a situation and turn it to your advantage. And humor was the way you and I did stuff like that. I mean, using humor is a great way to diffuse people's prejudices or maybe their uncomfortableness, if that's a word.
Yeah.
Their discomfort with being around you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I like that idea. I just didn't want – I taught you one thing, which is never start a fight, mm-hmm. but never quit a fight.
Right.
And because otherwise you'll just be in another fight. So just keep fighting until –
yeah.
Somebody bails you out.
Yeah, right. And it's funny because I remember this as a child. We'd be at some sort of social gathering or we'd be around some of your adult friends, and I would do something and you would kind of make fun of me, and then all the other adults would just be like, what are you doing? That's your son. But then I wasn't fretting about it, like, because this was normal to me. So then I would fire back something at you, you know, and this was kind of our thing. And I just remember the other adults would just freak out about it. And I always wondered about that. Like, as a kid, you always grow up with, you think your normal is everyone's normal. So I thought it was normal for other kids, like parents, to make fun of their kids and to kind of teach them. To fight back. Yeah. I didn't realize until I got to school that certainly wasn't the case.
That's probably true. I think we can all benefit by getting kidded and having to defend yourself, because that's what makes you think about your basic values. If someone challenges your basic values, you should be able to articulate some justification for the reason you think the way you do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that means in philosophy, in politics, in any endeavors, you ought to be able to justify your beliefs. And if you can't justify your beliefs, then you ought to think about it or read some more until you can.
And maybe change your beliefs.
Maybe you change your beliefs. You can't be, you know, knotted in it. It'll hold you down.
Sure.
It'll hold you down.
I remember one thing that kind of you and Mom differed in when you were parenting me, is that I would come home from school and I'd say, so-and-so is bullying me or so-and-so made fun of me. And you'd always tell me, okay, well, if someone makes fun of you or someone annoys you, you tell them, hey, don't do that ever again. And if they do it again, you slug them. Well, you hit them.
No, I don't want
that. Now, that was not exactly Mom's point of view. Mom was always like, go find a teacher or talk to the principal.
Well, and, as I said, I never wanted you to start a fight. I just didn't want you to quit one.
Yeah. So if someone – and you always told me. You said, well, if that happens and someone makes fun of you and you tell them stop and they make fun of you and you hit them, you're not in trouble with me. You're fine.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, if something happens to the school, that's beyond your control. But when having a child that's different, because you also have another child who we're not all too fond of. We can all agree that she's not as good as me.
Oh, the poor thing.
But yeah, I have an older sister, and so you had to teach. You had to be a parent to one child that's considered by other people to be normal, and one child that has special needs. It seemed to me that you were always treating us both equally. You didn't seem to do any favorites or anything like that.
Well, I don't see how you can call your sister normal. I mean, in her whole life, she never got a grade lower than an A.
This is true. This is something that I had to deal with my entire childhood.
I remember, Brad, when you came up to your mom and you said, you know how difficult it is to be the little brother of a genius?
Yeah. I don't talk about this much because I like to make fun of my sister as much as I can. But yeah, Katie is kind of a genius. She never got a B throughout elementary, junior high, high school, valedictorian. Went a full academic scholarship to USC. And I'm sitting here like, well, what the hell, man? What do I got to do? I got to do something to stand out. So I'll just be the funny, popular one. I'll do that.
Not to brag too much, but as I recall, your sister graduated first in her class at USC in accounting, international business, and philosophy.
All right, Dad, I get it. I get it. She's great. She's fantastic.
I can't remember what all your degrees are in, but most of your degrees are room temperature.
Come on, man. Listen, I've done plenty of other things. I've done all right. Well, I mean, but that is something else that I wanted to talk to you about. Is at some point I called you up, or I think I actually did it in person, and said, hey, I know I'm really close to graduating from USC as well, but I'm going to not do that. I'm going to be a comedian. And then your response and mom's response, which is the response you should have. I'm not saying you shouldn't have this. The correct response in that scenario is, what the fuck are you thinking?
As I recall, when you said you wanted to quit school to become a comedian, I said, is this some kind of joke?
Yeah, because if it is, I don't like it. But how did you deal with that? How did you deal with me saying that I wanted to be a comedian?
You know, I didn't have a bit of problem with that. I'm a firm believer that some kids only need a high school education to be very successful.
Sure.
Like I look around, the people that are really providing good services for other people, the plumbers, the electricians, the construction workers, those are the kind of people that really build our society. Yeah. And you don't need a degree from the Annenberg School of Communications at University of Southern California to be able to be a great plumber.
So you thought to yourself, well, my son's dropping out to be a comedian, but at least he could be a plumber. Hell, he can get down under the sink and probably stand up under that thing.
Well, I never thought about that. But if you're a homeowner and something goes wrong, now you realize how important all those tradesmen are and those people are. And even decorators, all that kind of stuff. They all help us in our society. And I'm a big believer. You don't have to finish college to be valuable. And you can be, and then again, a guy like me, I had to go for 3 years after college to learn a trade and
law school. And you were a lawyer, but also I think when I told you that I was getting into show business, you had some hesitation because you were involved in an aspect of show business at one point when you owned a nightclub, you owned a rock and roll club, which is. The Rock and Roll Club is kind of influential in Southern California's punk rock history.
Yeah, it is. That one. Actually, I had three of them with a partner. Mm-hmm. I had a buddy named Jerry, and he had run one nightclub once before, and we'd been introduced, and I had access to a little bit of dough, and he did some dough to open a nightclub. So we opened the Cuckoo's Nest in Costa Mesa, and we had some classic, like Metallica played their first gig at the Cuckoo's Nest.
Their first gig in probably Southern California.
Their first gig.
But I thought they were from San Francisco. Maybe?
Well, I don't even remember. Jerry did all the booking. Jerry did all the, you know, the heavy lifting.
Yeah.
I just put in the money and I'd show up and collect money.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah, it was a good thing.
So you had Metallica playing an early show for you guys. And I think you told me you guys had Black Flag, and you guys had Social Distortion.
Yeah.
And you guys had Motley Crue.
The Ramones.
The Ramones. Come on. And how – now, you had to deal with the band. Or did you deal with the bands, or did Jerry deal with the bands?
No, I didn't really. The only – because of my profession as a lawyer, I would get involved when there was an issue of some kind, a legal issue or something. But, no, Jerry was great. He handled the whole thing, And we were partners we were both compensated and I did my thing and he did his thing.
Any crazy stories from the Cuckoo's Nest that you can recall or that you feel comfortable telling me?
Well, here's one I shouldn't tell.
Oh God. Okay. Perfect.
We had a sound booth,
yeah.
And in the sound booth were these warning signs that mm-hmm. said, danger, high voltage, stay out, no admittance. I mean, there were 10 signs, I think, and a ladder that went, and they're on the ladder and everything going up to the sound booth. So our sound engineer is up there one night working the lights and working the amps and doing all the stuff that sound engineers do. And he looks around, and there's a guy standing right behind him in the sound booth, and he says, hey, you're not supposed to be here. Get out of here. And get out now. And the guy turned around and went down, started to go down the ladder and fell and mm-hmm. broke his ankle. Mm-hmm. And so he filed, he went and got a lawyer from, you know, from downtown, so to speak.
From the Yellow Pages.
Yeah, filed a lawsuit
yeah.
against the Cuckoo's Nest and our corporation, which was the HLD Corporation, and that stood for that was Huey, Louie, and Dewey. No, we had it was the McDuck Corporation, which
see?
We
all right.
We started McDuck because we thought McDuck was really Uncle, you know, Scrooge McDuck.
Yeah, so yeah, yeah.
We were going to be really rich, so we called it the McDuck Corporation.
Listen, and for our listeners, they know that me and Adam make a ton of references about DuckTales, the show DuckTales. In our podcast, that was the cartoon show which had Scrooge McDuck and it had Huey, Dewey, and Louie. So you see, listeners, I get it from my dad. Before I was even born, your corporation was called the damn McDuck Corporation.
It was,
and you were Huey, Louie, and Dewey Inc. or something like
no,
that.
No, it was the McDuck Corporation. Yeah. Then we opened a couple more nightclubs and yeah. we put them under the aegis of HLD, and people would say, what's HLD? Your name is Pete and your name is Jerry.
Yeah.
We said, no, it's Huey, Louie, and Dewey. People couldn't understand that.
The apple does not fall far from the tree.
Yeah.
So the guy sued you.
Oh, yeah. He filed a lawsuit against me. And at the time, we had a doorman named, it doesn't matter, his name was Killer. I mean... He was the...
It's a good guy to hire as a door guy.
Yeah, he was he was the third ranked in the world of full contact karate.
Jeez.
Third ranked in the world, as I recall. He was tough. I used to tell people I watched him surround three people one night. He was unbelievable. So anyway, this I called up this lawyer and I said, I can't help but notice this lawsuit. I thought I'd tell you that I can send you a picture with a bunch of signs, you know, saying, showing that your potential client there was trespassing and breaking all sorts of rules and stuff. And this lawyer said something to me like, well, Mr. Williams, this case is worth a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And I said, counselor, I got the third ranked full contact karate fighter in the world. You know, for $100, he'd off your client. And for another 50, he'd do you. So how much do you think your case is worth? He says, are you threatening me, Mr. Williams? And I said, yes, I am. He dismissed the case the next day. I shouldn't tell that story, but I'm not a lawyer anymore. And if I were, they could take my license probably for doing something like that. But anyway.
Yeah, but you're not a lawyer anymore. You're retired. You're fine. And that's kind of you being a badass. The guy was trying to swindle you. You know, and you were a lawyer. You worked at the public defender's office, correct?
Yes, funny you would bring that up because I got a luncheon tomorrow with all the geezers from the Los Angeles County District Attorney and Public Defender's Office. Mm-hmm. We meet at a place for lunch once a month and got a bunch of 70-year-old, you know, retired lawyers and we, you know, out BS one another, telling stories of old stories about funny things that happened in court.
Sure.
There's a guy there and he's got a very famous name. I won't tell you his name because, yeah. You know, to
protect the innocent,
But mm-hmm. we had this judge and he was reading a probation report and the lawyer I'm talking about was standing next to his client who had pled guilty to burglary. And I remember the judge, turned to the defendant and said, it says here in your probation report that you didn't really do the burglary, that you just pled guilty because your lawyer told you to. He says, do you think this court is stupid? And the lawyer said, so stipulated, Your Honor. He's the only lawyer in L.A. County that could get away with that.
Wow.
Funny man.
Yeah, and as the public defender, you had to take on whoever, like whoever they brought you, right?
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Yeah.
I ended up being the head deputy, so I got to assign the cases. But I did, you know, I don't know how many murder cases, say, I did in my career, probably 40 or something.
Wow.
And probably 5 to 10 of them were death penalty eligible defendants. And then I was advisory counsel on another probably 50, 60, 70 death penalty cases.
And you were defending these guys.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's I think there's 750, give or take, death row inmates up at Q, up at San Quentin. Mm-hmm. And probably 4 of them are mine, 5 of them, I don't know, you know.
So you didn't do so well in those cases.
Well, usually when they're going for the death penalty, yeah, Brad, they have
clear cut.
They're holding, you know, all the cards in the deck, and you're just happy to escape with sometimes LWOP, which is life without parole. But if you can get a straight life, maybe your client has to do 25 to life on a life. You have to do 25 years or 16 or whatever, depending on whether you had a gun, and you know, that could add 5 years. But
now,
that kind of stuff.
I think I asked you this question a couple of weeks ago, but I think it's a good answer, because some people would say, how can you look at the evidence in front of you for some of these cases for these guys who obviously kill people. And how can you then defend them? Like, what's your mindset? Like, how in good conscience can you stand next to a guy that you're like, wow, this guy killed people, and actually defend that person?
Well, we have a system, Brad, and the system dictates that everybody is entitled to a competent defense. That's why they started public defender's offices, because of... Yeah, there were some things creeping into the system that weren't good. Public defenders are well trained, and they're really to a great degree, they're just as good or better than any lawyer you can hire with, you know. And the public defenders are assigned to people with no money. Mm-hmm. But we ended up having a whole lot of experience in working the system. And what you're doing in a lot of cases, as you say, let's say you read the crime reports and you read the arrest reports, and you find out that the evidence is pretty overwhelming against your client. Well, one of the things you want to make sure you do is to make sure your client isn't over-punished, because a lot of these cases carry emotion, and you know, it may be an assault, and people get really angry when they get assaulted, and they just soon kill the defendant. But in assault, you know, if it's assault with a deadly weapon, it used to carry a 1 to life, which is a strange...
Well, that's a kind of a vague
thing.
Yeah. I'm going to go for... 12 months, or the rest of your days.
Well, yeah,
whatever.
Depending on
give or take on the
parole board, that sort of thing. But anyway, a lot of times you're making sure your client isn't overpunished. But even if you're pretty sure that he or she did whatever it was they're charged with, if the prosecution can't prove it, you have to do your best. And we did. And the reason is because since they can't prove it, maybe your client's innocent. Mm-hmm. And you just can't. It's not acceptable that some innocent person would end up in the joint.
Now, you would frequently tell me, and kind of going back to how you raised me in terms of humor being important, that you would frequently use humor when you were practicing, when you're in trial.
That's true. And one of the rules, and I used to teach a course on trial practice, and one of my rules is, humor is a part of life. If you don't have humor, why bother? Fun things make things fun. Mm-hmm. And so one of the lessons I taught the young lawyers was to use humor, but if you're going to say something funny, make sure it's funny. Otherwise, it drops like a...
you don't want to bomb.
It really bombs.
Yeah.
I was telling a story recently about a good friend of mine who got involved in a business dispute. Mm-hmm. And he's sitting next to me in the trial in downtown Los Angeles in the courthouse. So we're in trial, and there's 12 in the box. And the judge, who I knew, he was sort of a pal, The judge is on the bench, and I call a witness for my client. And the clerk said to the witness, could you please state your name and occupation for the record? So she said, yes, my name is so-and-so, and I'm currently on the city council serving as mayor. And the judge looked down at this woman and said, Mrs. So-and-so, you're the mayor? And I stood up at this very inopportune time and said, objection, Your Honor. And the judge looked at me and said, yes, Mr. Williams, what do you want? And I said, well, Your Honor, it's not Mrs. So-and-so. It's Your Honor, Your Honor. And he said, oh, you're right. I'm sorry, Your Honor. She said, that's okay, Your Honor. He said, no, really, Your Honor. I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm sorry, Your Honor. And the jury cracked up. And so we loosened him up a little bit and got a very good verdict.
Sure. Well, and that shows you an important lesson that if you just come, and rather this be for a trial argument or just an argument in general, if you're able to insert a joke here and there, a well-timed joke, let's say.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, then it kind of loosens it up and makes it not as stressful. Yeah. Now, I want to talk about a couple more things. You, while you were raising me, would repeat certain things over and over again, certain sayings that you kind of wanted to make concrete. You wanted to make these life lessons that so I would always know what to do by through remembering these simple sayings, and I actually have them in front of me. So I wanted to go down life lessons from Peter Williams.
Yeah.
And sort of what you mean by them.
Let me just say this.
Sure.
Especially nowadays, I meet so many young people that are so smart, and yet they lack... They know how to solve all sorts of problems. Anyway,
phone's ringing, but we'll ignore that.
Yeah. So anyway, one thing they don't have is what I call wisdom, which is just stuff you learn by being alive a long time. So I think I have a certain amount of wisdom that the young folks don't have, but yet the young folks know all sorts of stuff that I don't know.
Sure, like how to text.
What's text?
Exactly. So I'm going to go through, these are life lessons from Peter Williams, the wisdom of Peter Williams. Number one on the list is make good decisions. I mean, that sounds pretty basic, but there's some depth to it if you just kind of always remember, make good decisions. That's
well, cool. I feel like as you go through life, you're constantly faced with, do I do A or do I not do A? Or do I do B or do I not do B? So you're constantly balancing these decisions you have to make. Should I quit school and become a comedian?
Right.
Or shall I finish school and dry windshields at the local car wash?
Sure.
So, you know, you have to make a decision. And not to put down windshield dryers, because those guys make my car shine. But still... You know, you make decisions as you go in life. Like, should I quit school or not? Well, think about down the road. How can it have a good effect or a bad effect on you? So just generally make good decisions.
Make good decisions. And then this one may have been the lesson that you said the most. You would say, you live your life by habits. And if you have good habits, you never have to worry about doing the wrong thing.
Yeah, that's right. I believe that. Because you can get in the habit of cheating. Mm-hmm. Like, I just went to the gym, and I was thinking, do I really want to do 30 of these, or could I do 20?
Yeah.
And my habit is, once you start cheating, you're really cheating yourself. Mm-hmm. So just do what you sign up to do. If you sign a contract that obligates you to do something, you do it. Otherwise... See, if you cheated as a kid, then you'll cheat later in life too. I've seen it too often.
Yeah, as a lawyer, I'm sure.
Yes.
Yeah. So I mean, so just start getting into good habits as a and when you say live your life by habits, it's not just for the decision making process, but it's actually just so you remember stuff. I remember something that would happen frequently in our house is we would come home and there would be a watermelon in the middle of the floor, or there'd be a chair turned over. Now, for a lot of people, that would seem pretty odd. For us, that was normal because we knew, oh, Dad's trying to remember something.
That's exactly right.
So when you did something that, and you thought to yourself, well, this isn't in my regular habit of doing. I don't normally have the pool water on, or I don't normally have this thing burning in the oven, or whatever. You would just turn over a chair or put a melon in the middle of the floor. So when you walked down, you went, why the hell is that melon in the... Oh, yeah, I got to go turn off the sprinklers. Or like, it was something like that.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. So that just shows you that you live your life by habits. Great. So be aware of that. So make good habits so you don't have to worry about doing the wrong thing. But also, if you go outside of your habit, and like you told me, if I ever have a kid, never put your child in a car seat on top of the car while you go into the car and like busy yourself or unlock a few things or check your phone or do whatever. Never put that, because that's not in your habit to put the child on top of the car. Then you get in the car, you start driving off, and all of a sudden there's a kid on your roof.
Well, no, the kid's on the pavement by then, face down.
You guys wonder where I get it. Here's one that I like from Life Lessons from Pete Williams. The easiest thing in the world to do is spend someone else's money.
Yeah, and that's both sides of the political spectrum.
Sure.
It's real easy to say, oh, yeah, why don't you go buy one of these? Mm-hmm. Well, maybe they don't think it's worth that amount of money.
Yeah.
That's why they don't go buy it. Otherwise, they would have bought it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you don't know what people's tolerance for expenses. Sure. And so I just...
People say, hey, you should loan me some money. Why? Well, because you have all this money. You're like, well, but it's my money. It's real easy for you to just start spending my money. And then I'm guessing that it kind of also goes to husbands or wives that are not the primary earner in the relationship, that just kind of go like, oh yeah, we'll give you $1,000 for your, for whatever.
Well, one of the reasons that your mother and I are still together, mm-hmm. is one of the many reasons we're still together is that she has always been very responsible. I didn't spend her money. She didn't spend my money. I think she was very responsible, except for one time. I think, it was right about the time you were born.
Uh-huh.
Your mother had just had Katie, or was about to have you. She wanted to get back in shape, and she went out and bought a jump rope. But it wasn't just any jump rope. It was a digital jump rope, mm-hmm. that counted the number of times you jumped.
Yep.
And I thought, that is the biggest waste of money I've ever seen. And it's really the last time that I can think of that she really wasted money. I mean, if you can't count the number of times you jump a rope... Oh my
gosh.
Well,
if you look back on over 30 years of marriage, and one of the big things is you bought a jump rope, I think you're doing okay.
Yeah, but she wasted $4.
And you'll never forget it.
I've never let her forget it either.
Yeah, I bet. Here's another one that you repeated constantly, and that's good taste never goes out of style.
Boy, is that true. You know, another one that goes along the line is a blue blazer goes everywhere.
You told me that very frequently.
Yeah, it's like, you know, if you don't know what to wear and you're on your way to an event that isn't a formal event, mm-hmm. you know, put on a pair of slacks and a dress shirt and a blue blazer. And you might want to tuck a tie in the pocket in case a tie is necessary later. But most of the time in the 21st century, there's not too many events that you have to wear a tie to if you're an everyday American, yeah. like me and like those of you listening.
Yeah. Now, and this, you would say that good taste never goes out of style. When I would come home, probably in my younger teenage years, and want some sort of weird fashion thing, like, oh, I'm going to dye my hair, or I'm going to get an earring, or I'm going to get a shirt that's kind of weird, you would say, calm down. Are you really going to look back at these photos and when you're in your mid-20s and go, that was a great call? Yeah. Thank God I did that.
Well, my lesson to you was, if you want to get a crazy mohawk haircut and dye it purple, you can do that because it grows out.
Yeah.
But I didn't want you getting tattoos or piercings until you were old enough to sort of make that decision on your own.
Yeah.
I remember once you came home and Michael Jordan was your favorite athlete.
Yeah.
And I remember you came home and said, "Hey, Dad, I want to get an earring like Michael Jordan."
I did.
And I said to you, "Oh, okay, let's go. Let's go out. We'll get an earring and we'll get you a dress." And you said, "A dress? What's that for?" I said, "Well, if you're going to wear an earring, you're going to wear a dress." You said, "Oh, I get it." Anyway, it was just, I just didn't want you getting your ear pierced until you were old enough to understand that it's sort of a permanent deal.
Well, and I never got an earring, so that kind of shows you how that goes. You also always told me you can only do three things well, so choose wisely. Now, what does that mean?
Well, it seems to me that you have a bunch of choices in life of things to do and paths to go along, and one of the things you probably ought to choose to do well is to be a good family person. Mm-hmm. That would be one of the things. And if you have an occupation, be the best that you can be at your occupation, whether it's rather menial or whether it's rather sophisticated. Be the very best nuclear physicist you can be.
Sure.
Or whatever. And then there's other things. Like, you may wish to spend your time becoming the very best at an avocation. You might want to be the best bowler, golfer, ice skater, tennis player, along with being a good family man and being the very best you can be at your occupation. That's just an idea of three things you could do. But you can't, once you get to four, five, six things, mm-hmm. even the Greeks understood you remember things in threes. Right. So, like when I'd argue to a jury, if I had two items I wanted them to remember, I'd split one of them in half so that I could have three things. And if I had four things, then I'd combine two of them so I'd have three things. Because for some reason, the human mind remembers things in threes. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what the Greeks figured that out, a couple thousand years ago.
Mm-hmm. And there's a couple more lessons on here, but there's one that I want to kind of make sure that gets out there, because while you had all these things, you know, good taste never goes out of style, make good decisions, you live your life by habits, you only do three things well, choose wisely. There's also something that you told me over and over again. You would always say, never let anyone lock you in a refrigerator.
That probably doesn't apply to a whole bunch of your audience, but it's just one of those things that as a parent of a little person, you're conscious of. Kids used to die all the time in refrigerators, but now refrigerators have magnetic closure.
Right.
But in the old days, it used to be
a lock.
It was a lock, and you couldn't open the refrigerator from the inside. And kids used to lock other kids in refrigerators as a prank and then forget about them. We had a few deaths every year on that.
Yeah. And here's the thing. When I tell people that was part of the life's lessons, they always go, "Well, that's absurd. Your dad's cuckoo." But then I tell them, I think I was like fifth or sixth grade. I had some friends over here. And one of them thought, like, "Oh, well, let's play a good prank on this friend that's coming by. Brad, let's put you in the refrigerator, and then we'll have him go get a drink, and you'll burst out and scare him." And in my head, I thought, holy shit, this advice is actually coming true. I'm going to be able to say no, because my father always told me, never let anyone lock you in a refrigerator.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of air to breathe in there.
Yeah, and that's what I did. And they all looked at me like, "Really? He always told you that?" I'm like, "Believe it or not, yes, he did. He always told me that." So these are all good life lessons, yeah. And these are lessons that I've taken from you, and now that Katie is a mom and you're a granddad, hopefully we can pass these and other life lessons down to Liam, our son, and I think that's a great thing. Now, I did want to dive into one thing kind of quickly here in the end before we wrap things up, and that's in the past, I'd say, year and a half to 2 years, you've had a major health scare, where every, like, when I was growing up, every couple of weeks you would come home with a bandage on, and I would say, "Hey, Dad, why do you have a bandage on?" You say, I got some skin cancer burned off today." And it just kind of became the normal. Like, "Oh yeah, Dad's got some skin cancer that he's getting burned off." And it was never too much of a big deal for us. And this happened because when you were a kid, you played golf a lot and you never put on sunscreen.
That's correct.
Yeah. So, so there you go, kids. Wear sunscreen. But then about, I'd say maybe a little less than 2 years ago, it wasn't just a typical come in, get a bit of cancer lasered off, and you were fine. It was a little more major than that.
Yeah, it was. And I went down to the UC Irvine Cancer Center, and those people down there, I can name a number of them. Mm-hmm. I probably shouldn't say their names, but they are fantastic people.
Yeah.
I met people from all over the world, and in fact, I'll tell a quick story if that's okay about.
Absolutely.
I was checking in to this at where you check into the cancer center. I was down there to have some blood tests and things, and I checked in, and this woman, I looked at her name tag, and her name was Marcella. Mm-hmm. And I said, "Oh, what a beautiful name. Is that pronounced Marcella or Marcella?" And she said, "Well, I pronounce it Marcella." And I said, "You're not Italian, are you?" She said, "No, I'm from Bucharest." And I said, "Oh, you're from Romania?" She said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, you're the first person I met from Romania here at the Irvine Cancer Center." So then she had me sit down, and another lady came out and called me in for my blood test. And I looked at her name tag, and it said Mariana. And I said, "Mariana, that's a beautiful name. Where are you from?" She said, "I'm from Romania." And I said, "Romania?" And I said, "That's where Marcella's from. Did you come over with her?" She said, "No, I never knew her." She said, "She's from Bucharest. I'm from up in the hills in an area called Transylvania." And I said, "Transylvania, my gosh." I was there for a blood test. "Transylvania?" She says, "Don't worry, Mr. Williams. I've already had lunch."
But that's another thing, like you say, that humor could always lighten the mood. This is someone who's treating someone with cancer.
Right.
And if you do a joke that doesn't work for a cancer patient, that's going to be one of those Southwest want to get away type moments for sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, thankfully she had a good joke. But was it ever – did the doctors make it – apparent to you that, like, okay, this isn't your typical thing. This is a major deal.
Well, you know it is, because I had to go through radiation and chemotherapy and all that stuff, and even those people, those technicians they were so good down there, actually, I recommended the Irvine Cancer Center to a buddy of mine, and he drove by a hospital to get down there.
Right.
And and he's had very good results. He's going through extensive chemotherapy, mm-hmm. and so you got to give people credit where it's due.
Sure.
And it's neat that we have that Irvine Cancer Center down there in Orange County.
I mean, it's fantastic, and it's strange because we never really had the conversation. Like we didn't like sit everyone down in the family and say, like, okay, this is what I'm going through right now, or this is what Dad's going through. It was just sort of like we knew that you were going through treatment, and we knew it was serious when you hear the words chemotherapy, but we never really acted like, oh God, this is some major, like, we just kind of kept moving on. And I don't know if that was beneficial to you, or if that was good for you, or if you wanted to have those moments where you kind of went, hey, this is a big deal. Like, did we as a family react and treat you okay during that whole thing?
Absolutely. You don't want to dwell on your bad luck. You live through it and go beyond it. That's what I did. In fact, I had a call from the cancer center fairly recently that they had a guy down there that with some bad cancer, and he didn't have a very good attitude. And they called me up and they said, look, we've enjoyed having you down in the, doing the treatment. And could you call this guy and perk him up a little bit? So mm-hmm. I did. And because I think your attitude going into something major like that is important in terms of coming through on the other end in good shape.
Yeah, and it's funny you say, you know, that you wanted to talk to him, because I remember you would tell me that what really helped you going through this whole thing is, yes, it's important to have the love and support of your friends and family, but you said when you were going through chemo and going through the treatments, having other people in the room with you that were also going through the same thing, you guys were kind of all able to sort of bond together and build each other up, and you had that shared experience.
That's right. You wait. You have to wait in this little waiting room before that giant machine that fills you full of electrons or whatever.
Yeah.
So you wait, and the other guys are in there waiting, and so you swap stories, and I think it's good. It's nice the way they have it set up down there. Yeah. It's very good.
And then I don't know if I ever told you this story, but the time when you went in and actually found out that you were in remission, that doctor's appointment.
Okay.
I was in Denver, Colorado, doing shows, and I knew you were going for the appointment where I wouldn't say it was a make or break appointment, but this was the appointment where it was going to be like either A, it's worked and you're showing signs of recovery, or B, it didn't work, and we have to either try a more aggressive treatment or something different. Like it was kind of a big day. It was kind of a big crossroads. And I remember I knew you were having the appointment, so I called mom, or no, mom called me right as I was backstage, and I knew what the call was going to be about as soon as I saw the phone. And as soon as I saw her name on the ID, and I remember the first word she said was, "He's in remission. They can't find any cancer." This was about 5 minutes before I was going to go on stage, and I remember in the green room, I just fell to my knees. I just fell to my knees and started bawling. And all the other comics are in the green room, and they're looking at me like, "What the? Like, what's wrong with you?" And I just kind of perked up and went, "My dad, you know, my dad's okay. My dad's in remission." And then I went on stage, and you know the joke I have in my act where I say, like, we should be giving dwarves to cancer patients because they'll feel better. You know, yeah, sorry, sir, you got cancer. Damn it, here's your midget. Hell yeah.
I already had one.
Yeah. And I start telling that joke on stage, and when I say we should give dwarves to cancer patients, boom, I start bawling again on stage in front of everyone. Now the audience is seeing me cry, I had to take a moment and tell the audience, like, hey, I'm sorry I'm doing this, but this is the news I just got. And the outpouring of emotion from the audience was so great.
Oh, cool.
And so positive. And then so many people came up to me afterward and started telling me, like, that's so great that you're dead. And they would tell me stories about how cancer affected their lives. And
absolutely.
And people, and some people weren't so lucky. But there was never any sort of there was never any hatred of, like, well, why did your dad beat it, and why is he in remission but my dad isn't, or my mother or cousin, whatever. It was never negative. It was always just, thank God somebody kicked this thing's ass, thank God somebody did it, and because that gives us all hope for the future that we'll be able to conquer this horrible damn thing. And I thought that was really cool. I thought that was really a positive thing to hear.
So you were in Denver. I didn't, you know, it's nice that they legalized marijuana there, because now they really are the Mile High City.
Absolutely. And yeah, I remember after that whole thing, you saved the, I think it's the radiation cage or whatever, the thing that they put you in.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, you saved the sort of shell that they put you in when you're going through radiation.
Yeah, they give you, it's like a hockey goalie's mask.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there's holes where they want the radiation to go, and then there's areas where they don't want it to go, so the mask prevents the radiation from going there. Yeah, I forgot about that. And a lady down at the cancer center contacted me, and said, "You kept your mask, right?" And I said, "Yeah." She said, and she had, she's an artist down in Laguna Beach. And she said she was going to make some sort of a montage or something. Yeah. She sure would like to have the mask. So I took it down to her and she put it in some work of art that she's got. Nice lady.
Now, why did you initially save it?
Just as a souvenir, I guess. I don't know. maybe I thought I was going to be a hockey player someday.
Well, hey.
I told you what my surgeon said after she took half my head off.
What's that?
Well, I'm in the operating room, and this nice lady was a surgeon, and she cut me from my hairline all the way down below my chin and took the whole left side of my head off. And when she was done, she ripped her mask off in the operating room. She said, "There's a face off in the corner."
Oh, that's so great.
So maybe that's why I wanted a hockey mask.
Yeah, that's so awesome. That's so fantastic. Well, needless to say, that was the best possible news that our family could get. And it was a very cool thing. And I've done sort of the math, and I sort of texted the whole family and said, "Hey, just so you know, this is the 1 year anniversary of dad being in remission." Mm-hmm. And because I remember I saved that date in my head. And now I think it's a date that should be kind of celebrated a lot. And you're doing all right. And you just got back on the golf course after about how long?
Well, it's been about a year and a half. My last my last 18 holes was in February, a year ago February. So it's been 18 months.
And that's huge, because to say you're a golf fanatic is a vast understatement. I remember growing up, you said, like, "Hey, if you ever have anything major happen, make sure it doesn't happen on a Saturday, because that's my golf day." So
I was pretty obvious.
Yeah. So it was really great to know that you're back on the course and back doing what you love, back doing your main hobby. And it's great knowing that, knock on wood, we're going to have you around for a few more years.
Hope so.
Dad, I want to thank you for doing this. This was a lot of fun for me. I hope you had fun.
Sure.
I
How can you not have fun when you're with a little person?
This is absolutely true. And I hope our listeners enjoyed it, enjoyed the wisdom and the life lessons of Pete Williams. And if you ever want to give me a compliment and say, "Brad, I really like your humor," you have one person to thank in this world, and that is my dad.
So that's the show. Thanks for tuning in. We had laughs and stories. Now go listen to more episodes on iTunes or your phone. Subscribe.
Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessime Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice. We'll
you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger. Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.